This show is not a substitute for professional counseling. The views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Further, any opinions heard on this show are not meant to replace professional health care and mental health treatment. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you are in need of professional help and are a UA student, you are encouraged to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, it's 6 o'clock and time again for Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We are broadcasting live from the WVUA FM studio, 90.7 The Capstone on the campus of the University of Alabama. Good evening. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther and I'm the host for the show. In case you don't know, this show is about mental and physical health issues that affect college students and in particular, UA students. You can listen to us live each Tuesday night at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM or online at www.wvuafm.ua.edu. And tonight we'll be taking questions via email. So if you have them, please email questions to brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu and we'll try to get those on the air. Let me remind you, this is not a call-in show, so I ask that you don't call into the station with questions at this time, but like I just said, you can email us questions and we'll try to address those. Also, if you have any ideas for upcoming shows, please email us and we'll consider some of those upcoming ideas. We have most of our shows planned for the spring semester, but definitely by fall, we're going to need some new ideas. So brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. Last week, we talked about seasonal affective disorder and treatment. We had Dr. Paul Weir, a psychiatrist from Birmingham. He drove down to talk to us for the whole hour about seasonal affective disorder, or SAD. It was so interesting because a lot of people struggle with that this time of year, especially when the days are shorter. But the days are getting a little bit longer, so I think that's going to help some people who suffer from SAD. You can listen to the podcast of that show and other shows on the Counseling Center website at counseling.ua.edu, and I'll give that out again at the end of the show. Next week, we're going to be discussing benefits of group therapy. So join us next week if you're interested in group therapy or you just kind of want to find out what it's about. We'll be talking about how well people do using group therapy instead of individual counseling. Tonight we're discussing a unique topic. I'm so excited because last year we had a show on animal-assisted therapy, and we actually had a couple of dogs in the studio that sat in the chair with the headphones on, and it was just that was the most fun show I think we've had. But tonight we're going to be talking about something a little bit different. I was hoping we could get a smaller miniature version of a horse, and you'll understand why in a minute, because we're going to talk about equine-assisted therapy. I didn't realize how beneficial horsemanship can be with such issues as PTSD, autism, anxiety disorders. Several behavioral and emotional disorders can be helped and soothed from taking care of a horse and actually riding a horse. Therapeutic horseback riding is the use of horses and equine-assisted activities in order to achieve goals that enhance physical, emotional, social, cognitive, behavioral, and educational skills for people who have disabilities. It not only focuses on the therapeutic riding skills, but also the development of a relationship between horse and rider. My first guest has a remarkable resume. I pulled it up, and it's like 20 pages long. Dr. Vanderveer is new to the University of Alabama. She comes to us from Portland State University, and she's the dean of the School of Social Work here on campus. She has extensive experience working with the mentally ill and has done much research with tribal youth. We're going to get to that in just a minute, from the Pacific Northwest. But my interest peaked when I first noticed her in an article when she was announced as the dean of the School of Social Work, and it mentioned her interest in equine-assisted therapy, and I told myself, self, you have to get her on your show. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, BJ, and I too share the wish that I wish we could have had miniature horse here, just sitting in our lap. That would have been beautiful.
I think they would have died at the station because you can't even bring food or beverages in here, much less small animals. I want to first read an excerpt from an article that I read in doing research on this, and I want you to give me a little bit of a comment, if you could. Whether it's a five-year-old with autism, a veteran dealing with PTSD, or a senior citizen battling dementia, research shows that individuals of all ages can experience physical and emotional rewards through the unique relationship formed with the horse that can lead to increased confidence, mobility, and self-esteem.
I think that's a wonderful assessment. And I think what we're learning in the field of research and also those that are horse people is that horses are a wonderful tool to use as a accompaniment to psychotherapy and or any kind of activity.
Yes.
And one of the beautiful things about horses and why horses and equine assisted therapy is picking up popularity is that horses live in the present. They don't remember the past. They're not worrying about tomorrow. They really live in the present. And so their usefulness is what we refer to as mindfulness. We have to be very mindful in the present, being around animals, because that's exactly where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a little bit different than some of the other animal-assisted therapies, is dogs who are so forgiving, and they'll run up to you even if you've been mean to them. And
yeah.
Horses being prey animals are always looking for danger, and so they look to humans for comfort and for security. And they also don't pay attention to words. So horses, like many people, are very sensory animals. They don't operate with words. They operate with looking at body language. That's what dictates how they interact in the herd.
Definitely, yeah.
So they look to humans also with body language. And I think that's why veterans and children who sometimes have difficulties expressing their feelings through communication work so well with animals. Horses are very pure in their relationship with individuals, particularly in terms of space and respect,
mm-hmm.
and kindness and gentleness. And one has to be very still in their being to be around horses. And I think that is a feedback tool that one takes quite a bit longer to achieve in therapy than it does in a 10-minute session of being around an animal.
And on that note, you know, I've always heard, I've been around horses somewhat, but not as extensively as you have, of course, but I've always heard that horses are very intuitive and they sense fear. And if you are riding a horse and they sense your fear, you know, it could be a bad reaction.
Absolutely. Part of what's the therapeutic riding part about, and I think your second guest speaker will speak to that with great eloquence, is we teach people to be one with the horse. But it's not only just being on the horse, but being around the horse. And if you're nervous and showing gestures, they pick that up because that's what they use in the wild to determine should they run, should they flee, should they stay and eat. And even in the herds, a flick of the ear by a horse 15 feet away can signal danger that they all run away. So when we're scared, we put out vibes that show tension. We also put out pheromones that illustrate, you know, fear in our own body.
Mm-hmm.
Our own body produces odors and smells and just very subtle micro signs that say we're nervous. And a horse looks at you like, if you're nervous, I should be nervous too. Maybe we should all run away.
Yeah.
So that is, they're looking to humans for an understanding. And so one of the beauties of working with children and adults with horses is first not just plopping them on the back, but really teaching them to be very respectful working around a horse and to approach gently. The same sort of issues you're teaching people to be respectful to others,
mm-hmm.
Are demanded in some ways gently by a horse. They'll walk away from you if you are in their space. And that is a teaching tool that's also used in equine-assisted psychotherapy a lot.
You know, I mentioned just a minute ago in your introduction how extensive your research has been and your career in the mental health field. But how did you get involved with horses? Have you always been around horses, or how were you introduced to therapeutic riding?
Well, I'll start off. I won't give you my whole life history, but
please
does start.
It's only an hour long show.
But it, for me, my journey does start at age 6, as it does with many people. And I think anybody that's had a great experience with a horse will tell you some pivotal moment in their history that started with a horse and a special moment. And for me, that started when I was 6 years old, and a cousin who took me to a stable in West Texas. Now, I grew up in West Texas, so there's horses and quarter horses everywhere.
Cool. El Paso?
No, Amarillo.
Oh, Amarillo. Okay.
West Texas.
Cool.
Big, big winds.
We have
blowing.
A lot of students from Texas.
They should be here. Yes, I'm here. They should be here.
Yes.
But my cousin knew that as a... I'm sitting here in the studio, so obviously the audience can't see. I'm a very petite woman. As a child, I'm really petite, too. My cousin had the foresight to say to me, she said, we're going to teach you to ride. Well, why? It's because you're a very petite little girl. You're going to grow up to be a petite woman. You will need to be able to address issues always bigger than you. I'm going to put you on a horse, and you can't say no.
That early in life.
So we went to a barn, and she put me on a horse named Brownie, bareback, and she told the owner, don't put her on the little Shetland. They're mean, and I want her to learn how to handle things bigger than herself. And that was just a great lesson that my cousin would have confidence in me, and a horse knows how to take care of children.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that point, I realized, well, of course I can do anything I want to do. If I can have a 1,200-pound animal, I can steer one, I can do anything. And so there's a confidence building.
Yes.
Absolutely. And so the comfort of being around something that's so big translates to a lot of adult experiences later on. And so I just continued riding. And it wasn't until I became an adult later on that working with people in the community mental health field, they just weren't responding in some ways to some of the traditional therapy.
That's right.
And I'm knowing horses were a part of my life, decided to introduce them. And so we took some of our clients with mental health conditions out to a barn. And it was beautiful to see how they responded so differently to the horses. And about that same time, there was a lot of development with equine animal-assisted therapy, and equine was just starting. So that's where a lot of my research has focused on the last few years, was really trying to boost the research around equine-assisted activities, because the research needs to be there so we can support it through some of the best practices that we can offer clients.
I'm glad you said that, because my next question was going to be, what do you mean, for our listening audience, what are you talking about best practices?
In the field of mental health, for those of you who are involved in therapy and selecting therapies, the gold standard is evidence-based practices, and that's where clinicians and psychiatrists and therapists, nurses, anybody who's going to be offering an intervention goes to the literature to determine what's most effective. So the gold standard is evidence-based practices, where there's been a number of random controlled trials. These are very expensive studies to do, and there are very few evidence-based practices out there that match up with some of the conditions.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that we, just because they're not out there, we don't do them. The next layer of practices is best practices, which also uses evidence, what's the research out there, but it's more of a practical sense. So best practices in organizations would be strategies for what we know from consensus models or consensus panels about what works with particular groups. Now, best practices is used in the field of mental health, not to say we know from the science that this is effective, but we know from best practices that this is effective. And therefore, we use a variety of different techniques, best practices in mental health, best practices in organizations, best practices in management. My area right now has been tribal best practices, because many of the best practices that are available for clinicians in practice are those that have been tested with dominant populations and that may not be relevant to ethnic groups and ethnic populations. So many of the concerns that ethnic groups, particularly with the Native Americans I work with in Oregon, were that typical best practices were not tried and used appropriately with ethnic groups, with Native Americans. And from that began a research endeavor into, well, what, if not traditional best practices, what could be ethnically sanctioned best practice? And that's when the whole concept of tribal best practices was developed in the state of Oregon. It later became recognized through the state of Oregon, through the State Mental Health Division, as a recognized and contracted form of therapy that was specific to Native American populations.
So was that intertwined with the equine-assisted therapy at some point?
Yes, that's a great question.
Uh-huh.
Because what the tribal community was saying was that the horses are important history and have a very sacred spot in Native American history in an Indian country.
Right.
Horses always have. And in many of the equine-assisted psychotherapy programs, what the focus of the work is more interpretive And what does, when a horse walks away, how does that make you feel? So there's a lot of groundwork, what we call groundwork, where you don't get up on the horse, but you might brush them or you might work around
them.
Right,
right.
When a horse walks away, when it comes to you, what does that mean to you? So there's more interpretation from that. It's still, it's a wonderful tool. But what the Native community was saying to us is that, nope, our kids want to be on the horse.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to devise a particular curriculum that within one session that could be repeated over time and therefore measured, that would allow kids to begin the basic groundwork, brushing and grooming horses, to tacking them up to safety,
uh-huh.
and then finally riding them if
yeah.
they were ready. So within one session, they would be up on the horse if they so desired. And that was much more satisfying to the tribal youth than doing anything interpretive. They wanted to feel the horse and be present with the horse.
We're going to take a break in just a minute. Well, I think now Natalie's giving me a nod. And when we come back, I want to talk about what you and I were talking about before we actually started the show. Your personal horse, Cindy Lou. I love Cindy Lou's name. Cindy Lou. And caring for Cindy Lou and Cindy Lou's age and some details, but also any ideas that you have for utilization of equine-assisted therapy here in Tuscaloosa. So when we come back, we're still talking about equine-assisted therapy, and we have Dr. Vicki Vandiver. She's the new dean of the School of Social Work. Well, she's been here since August, was it?
July.
But she's still new. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
Listen to the voice of the University of Alabama, WVUA FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show host or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and tonight we're talking about equine-assisted therapy. My first guest is Dr. Vicki Vandiver. I want to say Vandiver. I told her I was going to mess her name up. She comes to us from the Pacific Northwest, Portland State University, and she is now the dean of the School of Social Work. But her interest, well, you have a vast interest, judging from your resume, but the horse therapy, I'm going to call it horse therapy. That doesn't sound good, does it? Therapeutic riding, is that the term?
There's so many terms, and what the work I'm doing is referred to as equine-assisted activities.
Yeah, EAT, E-A-A-T, right?
It could be.
Because I read that in some of the literature that I picked up. Before we went to a break, I mentioned that Dr. Vandiver has a horse. Tell us about Cindy Lou. How old is Cindy Lou?
My Cindy Lou is a saddlebred mare who is 20 years old and very cranky. And she is the love of my life. She's my first horse I've owned. I've always ridden other horses. And she actually, as a saddlebred mare, she's very active. But we have used her in therapeutic situations where children with autism spectrum disorder
yes.
have worked around her. She's very quiet with them and allows them to groom her, and so
she's calm.
She is calm with them. She's not calm with me, but she is calm with them.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was funny you telling me before the show about transporting her from Oregon to Alabama. Yeah. And how long that took, didn't you say it took a month?
It took a month for her to get scheduled to travel. Okay. It took about 8 days to travel from the Northwest.
And she did okay.
In her body language, she told me that she was not very happy with not having carrots every day from me. So she ignored me with turning her rump towards me at the end and finally gave in to me.
She pouted. I want to ask you about how we could take information from the research that you mentioned just a minute ago and use it with college students. We have a program here on campus, and I don't know if you're familiar with it yet. I had the director, Dr. Sarah Ryan, on our program. I believe it was last year. It might have, time goes by so fast, but she talked about it's a program for students with Asperger's. And, you keep mentioning, and I've read, doing research for this show, how autism, Asperger's, using equine therapy, equine-assisted therapy would be, it just seems like it'd be a good idea for something, with that program even. I know we have an equestrian team, but that's competition. That's different. Mm-hmm. So do you have any ideas, not to put you on the spot, but do you have any ideas for something that could be developed here with our students?
Absolutely. And I see our students being interested in doing research projects, from our psychology students, our social workers, nursing, anybody that's in the health and helping professions could be involved. Faculty could be involved in bringing students on board to do research in some of the programs that are available now. And I think your question before we took a break was very important.
Mm-hmm.
In how can we integrate the utilization of equine-assisted activities or therapies in Alabama and Tuscaloosa in particular, and our surrounding area? We have this amazing university with so many programs and colleges, students who are very interested in doing real research that does change lives. And for those people who are surrounded by horses, they know horses change lives. They simply do.
Yep.
But it's not enough to say that anecdotally. We have to have the research to support that so we can get funding to research that, so we can develop evidence-based practices that we can say to insurers, we can say to families, if you do this, if you involve your child in this, we can assure you some good results from this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think from nursing all the way to social work to psychology, if there's faculty who are horse people, and combining faculty who are horse people, students who are engaged in research, and putting them with programs like Margo will be talking
about
is the perfect equation. And there are a number of faculty in our School of Social Work who we were talking about grants and how can we begin to do this. And I left several projects in motion in the Oregon area that were doing just this. And I just finished a SAMHSA, Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration grant, in which we had money and funding for program evaluation of a program called Mustangs and More. More standing for Mustangs Offering Hope and Rehabilitation. And it was evaluating mental health status and many other conditions for tribal youth foster children who also were struggling with many mental health conditions. So it's just a matter of putting horse people together, and they know how to make things happen.
I believe you. I mean, and the Mustangs and More sounds like an interesting concept. Are these horses who have been abandoned or abused or rodeo horses? You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. Mm-hmm. In some places they would be. And actually, Mustangs and More, which is in the southern part of Dallas, these were Mustangs that were rescued, that were actually adopted off the Bureau of Land Management when they do horse roundups.
Yes.
These were adopted out and had traumatic histories in their adoptions and had to be regentled. And because of the regentling process, what we had was traumatized Mustangs and traumatized kids, and we put them together.
Oh, my.
And magic happened. And so we had funding to research that. We've got the data now, and we'll be doing the analysis of that about the next year.
I would think if some students are listening to this program, especially if they're animal lovers, and really never been around horses, a lot of people are scared of horses, and they won't venture out to try a program like this because they're scared. But a lot of horses are very gentle. I mean, they're, just as calm and... And when they get a little age on them, they're mm-hmm. they're very relaxed. And have you ever seen, one of the things that's interesting to me, because we have several students who come to the counseling center with PTSD and or anxiety disorders. How much research or how much have you been involved in that genre of working with individuals, adults even, and with horses and anxiety disorders, just for example?
In many of the riding programs or therapeutic riding programs or equine-assisted psychotherapy programs, they can specialize. Some will specialize in working with victims of domestic violence who are suffering from histories of trauma. Other programs that I've been affiliated will work with veterans who have significant PTSD and physical difficulties just for with mobility and from brain injuries and physical limitations. And the horses are a wonderful way to help reestablish confidence in oneself as well as just physical development. So it puts people together.
Motor skills. Something as simplistic as that.
Absolutely. And some of the best resources out there right now that's receiving funding and doing good science is research with horses that are working with children with physical disabilities. Mm-hmm. And so because you can measure bone density growth, muscle strength. And so anything that we can measure.
Like cerebral palsy, for instance.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Muscle strength can actually improve significantly after therapeutic riding. So some of the, horses can benefit so many different
populations
and needs. Mm-hmm. And some horses pick their people. I've worked with a social worker who was a horsewoman who said that she would let her clients just go wander on the horses and the horses would walk up to her. So she matched one time a woman who had an eating disorder was matched with a horse who had who was very finicky with food and they learned to feed each other.
Wow, horses have eating disorders. Yes. I didn't know that. That's neat. That's a neat way to help people bond with horses, especially if they have some apprehension.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that's going to do it for the segment with you. I cannot believe how fast this goes. We always say every week that we need to just have one guest on for the whole hour because it goes so fast, and I didn't even get to many of the questions. Is there anything else you'd like to add that you feel like needs to be known about what we're talking about, equine-assisted therapy?
Yes, thank you for that closing remark. I would like to say that for anybody who's going to be in the helping professions, that you have many traditional approaches available to you. Do think outside the box. Do think the benefits of animals. Think about exercise. Think about wellness and what people do that's normal. A lot of our therapeutic interventions really focus on the ill part of people, and there's a lot of wellness even in the most serious mental health conditions. And I think once we begin broadening out and trying to introduce and integrate animal work, and particularly with horses, with people, you will see changes. But it's not enough to say, we see changes and we love that. We've got to research that. We're a major research university.
Yes.
It's our obligation to bring science to a field that many of us know is very therapeutic and helpful and can change the lives of people. It's a good charge to us.
It's true. And I think you might get some listeners that might even contact you. I know you're a busy person, but I think I don't think it's going to be difficult to get people on the bandwagon, you know?
I hope not.
Thank you so much for being on the show. We're going to take a break right now. If you want to get in touch with Dr. Vandiver, she's right over in Little Hall, right? And you could email her or call her office if you're interested. We'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7, The Capstone.
I cannot explain what's going down. I can see you standing next to me. In and out, somewhere else right now. You sigh, look away. I can see it clear as day. Close your eyes, so afraid. Hide behind that baby face. Do, 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 do. You can drive. Yesterday, as I recall, you were looking out of place, gathered up your
things and slipped away. No time at all, I followed you until the hall.
Every day, we go about our lives driven by routine, our vision clouded by the very normalcy we take for granted. Countless victims of human trafficking walk among us, invisible. It's time to open our eyes. The Blue Campaign provides a unified voice for those who combat human trafficking, whether it's forced labor, domestic servitude, or the sex trade. Learn what you can do to help by visiting dhs.gov/bluecampaign.
Hi, this is Drew Holcomb, and you're listening to 90.7 The Capstone.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show host or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and tonight we are talking about equine-assisted therapy. We just had Dr. Vanderveer, Vicki Vanderveer, on the show, and she is changing chairs right now with Dr. Margot Malone. Can I call you Margot?
Sure, please.
Marguerite is your official name.
That's the one on my license. Yeah.
But I've always heard Margot.
That's
so
the one I got.
First, well, I thought it was two different people.
No, it was Marguerite, but then when I got to kindergarten, I could not spell it. A five-year-old absolutely can't do 13 letters. So they shortened it for me, and it kind of goes back and forth.
I'm not sure how you want me to introduce you, but I know you as a clinical psychologist for years. We've never met personally. I think through the counseling center in the 10 years that I've been there, I believe I've sent a few people to you over the years, but it's been a while. And, you know, when I was researching for this, I don't think I knew that you were involved in horsemanship or equine-assisted therapy, so I am tickled to death because, as Dr. Vanderveer said just a few minutes ago, she's more on the research side, but you are more on the practical side,
mm-hmm.
the practice. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to do what you're doing right now.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's actually kind of fun. I was raised in the Midwest and have been around horses all my life. And in fact, my first experience with a horse was being picked up by the back of my shirt and tossed. So it was kind of Shetland pony, you know. What
they're mean.
Shetland
I know
pony.
It.
But beyond that, getting into psychology and then finding that psychology and horses actually were a very good fit.
Was that your specialty when you first got into psychology? Did you know that you wanted to do that? Or
no.
Were you in some other area? You were in clinical, right?
I have always backed into everything.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately. Yes, I started out with gerontology, and in fact, that is still my primary interest.
Okay.
Work in nursing homes.
Yes.
But when our daughter was diagnosed with learning disabilities, it became very important to us to do something to assist her. And that's when I got involved with Beth McCauley, who is a speech pathologist who was here at the university for several years.
Uh-huh.
And she was a member of, at that time, North American Riding for the Handicapped, American Hippotherapy Association,
mm-hmm.
all those groups.
Mm-hmm.
And Beth and I started Bama Equine Assisted Therapy. She has since moved on to other universities, and I've just kind of part-time done the equine assisted therapy, taking clients here and there. As you know, insurance does not pay for it because it's not a proven therapy. So it was one of those things.
That's why the research is so important.
That's why the research
mm-hmm.
is vital.
Mm-hmm.
We have got to have that. We're going to survive.
What'd you see? I'm assuming your daughter benefited greatly.
Tremendously.
So what did you see over the years, months, days, however long? Obviously, she's been around horses for as long as you have, you know.
In fact, she's the director of our program
that's
now.
Right. I remember you telling me that. So how did you see her change from being around horses?
It was actually remarkable. When she got to go to the barn, when she got to be around them, her behavior normalized, her learning increased, she had less difficulty in school, less test anxiety. She's dyslexic,
mm-hmm.
and a little ADD, but she could not take any medications for it because she also has some physical issues that prevented that.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to work with the behavioral issues. When she did not get to go to the barn, she had extreme anxiety. She would have panic attacks. She would have difficulty at school. So that led me into doing some research into the research, I guess, looking at some very elegant studies that have been done in Europe, primarily Germany, Finland, where they actually use an EEG helmet on the rider, and it transmits EEG patterns to the laptop. You can see how the brain waves change during a therapy session.
So it's physical proof.
Yes, yes. In Europe, we have some very good studies. In the United States, not so much. We haven't had the funding put toward it. You know, this is a medical model country.
Exactly. And this is seen, just as Dr. Vanderveer mentioned, as more of an alternative treatment.
Right. It is considered an alternative. It does work. You know, we've been keeping file cabinet data for 30 years now at our operation, and I've got all kinds of program evaluation reports that say, yes, this client has improved on these measures over time. But what we need now is actual hard data, stuff where you compare control group to active therapy, where you compare two different therapies with each other. And in fact, we had applied for a research grant where we came close, so we're going to reapply, testing the VA's model of cognitive processing therapy added to equine-assisted therapy.
Okay.
To see if it has effect. That'd be step one. Then step two would be to test the traditional CPT against CPT plus equine-assisted and see if there's a difference in effect. Just from gut observations, I can tell you there probably will be. The VA is interested because the non-traditional setting usually appeals to veterans. People don't want to go to a shrink's office.
No, a sterile hospital.
Right, yeah, it's no fun. And that's the scariest thing you'll ever do, is to go in and tell a stranger things.
And just a minute ago, you hit on some words that I wrote down because we see students with panic attacks. We see students with anxiety. We see lots of students with test anxiety and some with ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
How have you ever had college students come out to the barn?
Yes.
For just volunteerism or for actual therapy?
Both.
And how have you seen it help this population? The same as it does, as it did your daughter, I'm assuming?
Yes. The results are really remarkable because not only do they get the self-esteem benefits that Dr. Vanderveer was talking about that she addressed with her own experience as well as with the tribal youth, the self-confidence that comes with being able to interact with such a large creature. But they also get the brainwave differences, which interestingly have been shown in other research using exercise. The horse's gait, its stride, mimics the human's walking gait. And therefore, any movement that the horse does translates to the human. So the human, therefore, gets the same stimulation as they would if they were walking.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be, it's analogous to regular exercise therapy. Mm-hmm. So one can say that the benefits you get from exercise therapy most likely would transfer and be present in equine-assisted therapy.
Right.
Plus the self-confidence and the feeling that you get when you truly connect with something that understands you. It's a very deep, deep sort of feeling.
Have you ever used horses to work with somebody, one of your patients, maybe with pain management?
Yes, actually, I have two elderly clients right now that we are working with pain management. One's post-stroke and one has a connective tissue disorder. And it's remarkable. We have to be very careful. You know, we have to work with the physician, make sure that we're not doing damage. And we also have to be sure we don't go over that patient's tolerance. But yes, we have some good results.
What's the difference? And I read this in some of the research prior to the show, because I like to try to act like I know what I'm talking about, even though I have no idea about equine-assisted therapy. What's the difference between equine-assisted psychotherapy and equine-assisted activities? Is there a difference? Because I read, you know, I saw that, the different terminology.
Mm-hmm.
So I wondered if is there a difference?
They're supposed to be. Equine-assisted activities can be conducted by any certified specially trained horse rider instructor. They also encompass people who have degrees in education and other areas that you do equine assisted
learning, equine-assisted physical therapy type things. Those come under mostly the hippotherapy label. Equine-assisted psychotherapy, however, is conducted by an individual who is licensed and credentialed in psychology or social work or counseling, one of the mental health fields, and they work in conjunction with a specially trained horse handler riding instructor. We use the PATH model.
Yes.
There's also EGALA. There's AHA. There's several different models out there, and they're not all that different.
What's the PATH model? What does that mean?
That's a Professional Association of Therapeutic Horsemanship.
Okay.
It used to be North American Riding for the Handicapped.
Mm-hmm.
And we do mostly mounted work, whereas EGALA uses mostly groundwork. Some different strokes for different folks, really.
Yes, yes.
But we have specialized instructors who have to have mental health certification in order to work with mental health clients. It's mostly a training and oversight program for the riding instructors than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So it guarantees that the riding instructors I work with have the proper training to do what they need to do.
How, this is just a curiosity question from one therapist to another. Mm-hmm. How do you measure progress?
The same old traditional way.
Okay.
The Beck Depression Inventory, the MMPI, the
anxiety traits. So you can still use the same testing
tools. Yeah, and we do. Everybody has to undergo an evaluation before they start. We get baselines, and at different points in the therapy, we repeat measures, and we make sure that the progress is happening. If it's not happening, then we're not doing our job, and we need to go back and retool.
What about cost? I know you mentioned...
Yeah.
Either you or Dr. I think you just mentioned that insurance does not cover sometimes. So what? How do you compensate, I guess, without getting up in your business?
Yeah. I understand.
But
I understand.
I know some of our listeners, that's what people wonder about.
Right. Yeah. It's a tricky thing because, it isn't proven, so therefore it isn't covered. So it has to be paid for out of pocket.
Right.
Now, sometimes... when we have an individual who's in a traditional psychotherapy with me, they're stuck. I will pay out of my own pocket at a fourth session at the barn with them, myself, and the riding instructor to see if we can get past that stuck point. And then sometimes people realize the benefit at that point and they're willing to go ahead and pay for that part of the therapy on their
own. Just like they would traditional therapy.
Just like they would traditional therapy.
I mean, I've had clients that their insurance didn't cover, but they wanted to come see me and you negotiate a little bit. Tell us a little bit about the farm. When I was on the phone with you inviting you to come to the show and be on the show, and you just mentioned your daughter, tell us the name, where it's located, how would a student... Do you take volunteers?
Oh, yes.
I mean, don't you need help out
there?
We
need lots of help, and we take every volunteer we can get. It used to be Serendipity Farm when I was running things. Now that she has taken it over and turned it into a PATH center, it's MNW Farm. That stands for Melanie and Wesley.
Okay.
Melanie and Wesley Williams. She has a horse training business, and she runs the barn now. She can be reached either through Facebook, email. We also have a website, trotusa.org. Trot has a Facebook page. We're constantly putting things up, events. We have another volunteer training just this weekend. In fact, if anyone is interested in coming, it's located at 3200 Clements Road. For those familiar with Tuscaloosa, if you head on the interstate towards Birmingham, at exit 77, there's this giant TA truck stop.
Yep.
And now there's a McDonald's and a Ruby Tuesday. Yeah. That's our exit.
Okay.
You get off there and take a left, come down to Clements Road and take a right. It's a half a mile. It's right behind the TA truck stop.
So it's close to the interstate.
Very close. You can get there in 10 minutes
from
anywhere.
How many horses do you have right now?
We have 18 program horses.
Okay.
Then we also have some boarders and some private competition animals.
We're going to take a break for just a minute, and then when we come back, our last segment, I want to ask Dr. Malone if there's any special training horses have to go through to participate.
Yes,
so
there is.
When we come back, we're talking about equine assisted therapy. Come back and listen to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
Hey, this is Andrew.
This is David.
We're the Revivalists. You're listening to 90.7 The Capstone.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back with Dr. BJ Gunther, and this is Brain Matters. And tonight we're talking about equine assisted therapy. And our second guest is Dr. Margo Malone. She's a clinical psychologist here in town, but she's also involved with, like I said, equine assisted therapy. And I wanted to ask you, Margo, about the horses. Do they have to be specially trained? You know, like some dogs have to go through certification before they can be an animal assisted dog.
Yes, they do. There is a program afoot to try to come up with some standards for that. That would be good, because a lot of times I think people think their backyard pet can handle this, and they really can't. Our horses go through an extensive 6-month training program, and that is after their saddle broke. Okay. We take a saddle broke, good, calm.
Thank goodness you said that.
Yeah. Good, calm, trained horse. And then we take them through an extensive 6-month program where they learn how to deal with all the therapeutic tools that we use. Because we use a lot of stuff. We play basketball on horseback. We use pool noodles. We have bells and jingle jangle things. And I mean, we have just
a lot of simulation.
A lot. And we also have a driving program where we use miniature ponies that pull carts for clients who are either afraid to ride or physically should not ride. Down syndrome has some counterindications.
Yes.
So we do have that program, and those ponies have to be ready to do just anything.
How small are they? I'm picturing little miniature ponies that
yes.
can live in your house.
Well,
you know,
they
small.
Could. And in fact, I was listening to you guys earlier and thought, oh, I wish I'd known. I would have brought Dee.
Oh.
He is our little mascot. He's on our logo, and he goes to the nursing homes and the schools. He's about 24 inches tall. He's a dwarf.
Oh, my gosh.
And if I'd known, I would have brought him.
I would have said, please sneak him in here under your coat.
I almost could, yeah. He's a tiny little guy.
Oh, my gosh.
But he is great.
I'm in shock because I would have loved to have seen that.
Dee and Elvis are our mascots. Elvis belongs to Sarah Brain Moment. Anyway,
yes.
The director of
a
the...
Yeah,
very. The director of the Autism Center here
Sarah
on campus.
Ryan.
Sarah Ryan. Yes.
What?
Elvis
no,
belongs to her. She worked out there with us.
Did you hear me mention her just a minute ago? Tell us about your benefit show, because I don't want to run out of time.
Yes. We, as, you know, as we discussed, insurance doesn't pay for this.
Okay.
And so we've got to try to find a way to feed the horses, support the horses, pay the instructors. So we are having our first annual benefit show on February 21st. Starts at 1 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
It's at 4R Arena in Ralph, Alabama.
Okay.
They have a great covered arena out there. It's listed on the venue site. I think we've got ads up on just about every place we can find at this point.
What's the website?
The website is trotusa.org.
Okay. And the information will
be
on that website?
The information for the horse show is there. We've got a full horse show with over 60 classes. We're wanting horse people from all over West Alabama to come and support us, but we're also wanting the general public. We have a historical reenactment group that's going to set up a campsite out there for the kids to play. We've got several other vendors and booths that are going to be there, trying to make it a community event to support.
So people can interact with the horses.
Yes.
It's not just a show.
Oh, no. Our therapy horses will be there, and they'll be enjoying all the attention they get.
It's February 21st, a Saturday.
It is a Saturday.
Okay, so it starts at 1. About how long will it last?
Depends on how many people come and enter. We're thinking 2 to 3 hours for our horse show.
I hope for good weather then.
Oh, it's a covered arena.
Oh, okay, perfect.
We're good. Even if it rains, we're inside.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much for being on the show. And
you're welcome.
And I hope to get more involved myself, but also some of the students that I see, and we see a lot of students at the counseling center. I think it would be a great beneficial way for them to improve with some of their issues that they come to us for.
Oh, yes, definitely.
I appreciate it.
And we love to have them out there, BJ. Thank you.
Let me make some announcements before we go. Don't forget our shows are recorded and podcasted on the Counseling Center's website at www.counseling.ua.edu. If you want to listen to past shows, just click on the Brain Matters icon and it'll take you to some of those shows. The University of Alabama's 24-hour hazing and harassment hotline at 205-348-8255. HALT, that's 4258, allows students, parents, or others to report incidents of discrimination, harassment, hazing, or any kind of unhealthy behavior. Any individual calling the hotline can leave a confidential message with the Office of the Dean of Students. Callers to the hotline are anonymous. Callers are asked to include as much detailed information as possible. For more information, contact the Office of the Dean of Students at 348-3326 or visit hazing.ua.edu. As always, I want to thank a few people who've made the show possible. Dr. Lee Keyes, who's the Executive Director of the Counseling Center. Terry Siggers from the Office of Student Media. My production assistants, Natalie and Dorothy Beck and Al Johnson. My colleagues at the Counseling Center, WVUA staff. Vincent Palmer, who helps us put these shows on the Counseling Center's website. And my guest tonight, Dr. Vicki Vanderveer. Oh, I messed it up. I knew I was going to do that. Dr. Vicki Vanderveer and Dr. Margo Malone. There's just too many doctors in this room, is what it is.
It's getting me high.
Next week, we'll be discussing the benefits of group therapy, so tune in. And as usual, you can email us with questions at brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. I hope you got that. Thanks so much for listening. Again, I'm BJ Gunther, and this has been Brain Matters on WVUA FM 90.7, The Capstone.
Substitute for professional counseling. Further, the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you're in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, please contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Build me from our hearts to our feet and surprise them with a victory cry.